Good morning. How's everybody feeling? Yeah? Do you guys, okay, raise your hand if you're having fun at camp so far. Yeah. I know karate. I can fight. Don't worry. So I'm Shania. If you don't know me, I'm from Oklahoma. I am a black belt in karate. I teach and train kids in karate and jiu-jitsu and spend most of my time bullying children. It's super fun. I definitely recommend. It's like the best job ever. Both of my parents are worship pastors, and their parents were classical music teachers, so it's kind of forced in the family to do worship, which I love worship, so it's nothing wrong with it. But basically, since I was three, I've been taking vocal lessons and piano lessons and ukulele and everything. I was raised in a church with a Christian environment surrounding me. I was homeschooled up until my junior year in high school. I trained at a Christian karate and jiu-jitsu academy. So I was surrounded by Christianity, right? I didn't really know how much of the world needed to know the love of God before I started going to school and started to actually do things outside of my Christian community. I'm also obsessed with plants. I love seeing the natural beauty that God has and that God gives the world. Like, if you look outside, there's no way an explosion could create this. Like, this is beautiful. It's literally just green, but it's beautiful. Like, if you see a flower, it's got so much tiny details to it, and I love it. It's so beautiful. I am also still in high school. I'm a senior this year, so I'm graduating. I'm super excited for what the Lord has for me. I want to go to college and study worship and kinesiology. And get into powerlifting, so it'll be super fun. Anyways, I'll stop yapping at myself. Actually, that's a lie. I talk a lot. Sorry. You're done for. But I do really love plants. And, like, my room, for instance, I have this one really tall plant. It's, like, 7 feet tall. It's a Monstera. Her name's Jeffany. Jeffany, yes, it's a beautiful name. I feel like if you name plants, you get a personal attachment to them, so then it's harder to kill them. But that's also just me. I'm very attached to, like, everything. Like, I could be attached to this music stand if I wanted to. Or I can name Mike the mic. Yes. But in my room, I have one north-facing window, and that's it. And the thing about north-facing windows is they give you the least amount of sunlight. And a south-facing window gives you the most sunlight. And so when I first started getting plants, I just kept all of my plants by a little north-facing window, and I didn't realize how much light my plants actually needed until they started dying. Once I noticed that my plants weren't looking too good, I moved them to a south-facing window. But the thing is, I have two cats, Alex and Kitty. They are absolute menaces. They're not allowed in my room, but they are allowed downstairs where the south-facing windows are. One of my cats, Kitty, he's a really curious cat and will eat all of your favorite plants, even if you named them. Like, he has no care in the world for Jeffany. He almost killed her. Like, it's not good. And then my other cat, Alex, likes to pee in the plants. He thinks that anytime he's mad, or if we don't let him outside to go kill bunnies, he's mean, I don't like him, he will come and pee specifically in my plants. He has it out for me. And he will, like, literally he'll look you dead in the eyes, and he'll just sit, and he'll just be like, like, he is insane. I hate that cat, but I also love him. He's my favorite cat, actually. He's really cuddly sometimes. I actually have scars on my arms from him. Anyways, those cats are allowed downstairs where the south-facing windows are. And so I didn't want to kill Jeffany and Jeffrey and Bethany and Brittany. And so I put them on a window that's 8 feet up in the air. Like, we're talking, like, maybe the bottom of this. That's not 8 feet, but, like, let's pretend that. We have a really high ceiling in our house, and so it's, like, really high windows. So I put it up there because I was like, the cats can't get to that, right? And the cats didn't get to it for a while. But what happened was it was in a completely different room outside of my line of sight. Like, you had to purposefully look at it to see what was going on with it. You had to go get a ladder, climb up there, and then look at the plant. Like, who does that for a freaking plant? Like, I like plants, but I'm not climbing ladders for a plant. And so it was out of my line of sight. You couldn't look at it until you directly looked at it, right? So you'd have to, like, we have a two-story house. You'd have to walk downstairs and look up. That's a lot of work. That would hurt my neck if I do that too much. I would not. And so my plants got dehydrated, and because I didn't water them. Yeah, I'm kind of a lazy bum when it comes to watering things. And I didn't even know they were sick until they were already dead because I didn't look at them. So I bought more plants. And this time I bought plants that only needed to be watered once a month because I realized I'm a lazy bum and I don't want to water plants. And I got plants that didn't need that much light so that I could keep them in my room away from the cats. I put those in my room right next to my north-facing window. And guess what? They survived until my cat figured out how to open my door. Like, he literally, there was like a little string attached to it because somebody decided to do that. Like, I think my sister probably just put a string on it, and the cat decided to go and pull the string, and it opened the door. Like, what's wrong with this cat? And he goes in, and he knocks over my plants, and they have little glass pots. And me, I was too lazy to go buy more soil and pots, and I waited too long, and they died. But now I have more plants. It's fine. I don't have a green thumb. I just keep trying and killing more plants. Except Jeffany. Jeffany's surprisingly still alive. Brittany and Bethany died, though. The thing about plants, though, is they give you multiple signs, and they take probably like a month for them to actually die. And even then, sometimes you can still save them. Plants are kind of like our walk with God, if you think about it. If you don't give it nourishment, time, attention, and light, you'll start to slowly drift away from God. And the further you are, the harder it is to see him. So with me and the plants that were on the 8-foot-tall windowsill, they were far away from me. I didn't have to look at them, or like I didn't see them unless I purposefully looked up at them. Sometimes we're so distant from God that we don't decide to directly look at him. We decide to directly look straight ahead, right? We don't look up to God. We don't look around. We don't like to be aware of what's happening. We just like to look at our friends, look at our phones, and ignore God. Kind of like I ignore plants. It's not good. You'll start doing things, like, the further you are away from God, you'll start doing things that you used to not be comfortable doing and stop trying to follow God and stop reading your Bible. You'll stop living for God and start living for yourself. And I'm only saying this because I've done it multiple times. You start taking your relationship away from the light and start letting darkness succumb. You stop watering your plants and they thirst for more. We're basically plants, if you think about it. Saying you're a Christian is easy, but saying you believe in God is also easy. But having your actions follow is hard. So, for instance, being at a camp with a bunch of teenagers that love God and, you know, want to get closer to God, that's what this camp is for you to experience the love of God and the grace of God. That's easy to say, God, I love you. God, I trust you. God, I need you in my life. But what happens when you go home and you're not around all your Christian friends? And what happens then? Are you going to just be the one that stands out, or are you going to be the one that goes into your group and forgets all about God? Or maybe you pray for God or pray to God when you need him but nothing else. Because have you ever had a friend that like only remembers you when they need something from you? Like, I have this friend, Sarah, and She's super chill, but when we were little, like maybe 12, she would come up to me and she'd like ignore me. She also had really bad RBF, so she always looked mad at me. But she would come up to me and talk to me only when she wanted to borrow my stuff. So like, let's say I'm wearing a cute outfit, like I am today, obviously. No, I'm just kidding. But let's say I'm wearing a cute outfit. She'll come up to me and she'll be like, oh my gosh, I love your outfit. Can I borrow it? Yeah, but any time other than that, she wouldn't talk to me. And honestly, sometimes that's how we are with God. We look at God and we say, God, I love you. God, I need you in my life. And then you find something better to do. You find something that's more entertaining for you. You go on your phone. You, I don't know, go party with your friends. You go hang out, you know? It's not even things that are necessarily bad. It's just things that distract you from the walk with Christ. So, like, I do karate and jiu-jitsu. When I have jiu-jitsu tournaments coming up, I'm over-competitive, by the way. I get mad. But when I have jiu-jitsu tournaments coming up, I do so much, like, training. Like, I'll go to jiu-jitsu at 5:30 in the morning, then I'll go to school, and then I'll go back to jiu-jitsu from 4 to 10. And that's just because I like winning, which I usually don't. But I spend a lot of time doing that, and when I do that, I start to realize that I forget to pray, I forget to talk to God, I forget to include him in my life, and Honestly, I feel like that happens to all of us. And the thing is, if you go so far away to the God, to the point where you forget he exists until another church camp or another youth night or another Sunday, you'll thirst for the love of God. You'll crave the light that God carries. You'll slowly allow darkness to take over the world and to take over your emotions, and you'll feel empty, but you won't even realize what you're missing is God because you won't directly look at him. You'll try to fill the void with relationships or try to distract yourself with friends and work and phones, and you'll forget what it's like to say, I know the name of God. But yet another Christian, when you're around other Christians, you'll be like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. I follow God. I just kind of forgot about that. Okay, if you have a Bible, go to Matthew. And if you don't have a Bible, get your phone out and go to your Bible app and go to Matthew. And if you don't have a Bible app, use Google and go to Matthew. Easy peasy. Go to Matthew 5:14. So in Matthew 5:14 through 16, it says, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden, neither do people light a lamp and put it under the bowl. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Read that again. You are the light of the world. Did you hear that? You're the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. If you decide that you'll follow God and show your love for God around people who feel the same, how are other people going to know the love of God? Like if you decide... Here, okay, I'm preaching, right? I'm talking to you guys about God, about our walk with God. What happens when I go home and I'm around my non-Christian friends and I'm around people that do things that they shouldn't be doing and I don't even mention God? How are they going to know that God loves them? How are they going to know that God died on the cross for their sins if I'm not willing to speak up? If we're not willing to speak up? What if someone is debating following God and knows that you're Christian, but then sees you partying or acting hateful or making decisions that seem unchristlike or just being disrespectful in general, and they decide not to pursue that relationship with God because of you? On top of that, around 20% of atheists are atheists because a Christian turned them away or was hateful towards them. Think about that. 20% of the people that won't get to go into heaven because they don't believe in God, don't believe in God because they noticed another Christian wasn't being nice to them and was being unkind. I mean, imagine it. If you go over to your friend and you start talking smack about a random chick named Bethany and you're like, oh my gosh, Bethany is such a freaking chud. And then your friend tells Gerald and Gerald tells Bethany and Bethany was already about to be pushed over the edge. You could be the reason Bethany does not follow God and have a bad image of Christianity overall. You could be the reason that the girl doesn't go to church or doesn't try or just doesn't have a Christian community or even hates God. And most of the people who hate God don't actually hate God. They hate the people they have imagined as Christians, and they think that God is like those people, which God is completely different from people. Like, he brought Jesus down, but Jesus was the only perfect human. He was the only one that was different in the world to the point where he was the only perfect sacrifice. We should not be the example that makes people want to walk away from Christianity. And sometimes I feel like we as Christians feel like we need to judge everyone around us. Like, I had this old youth pastor that would roll his eyes every time this one girl came into the room. He did it to me too. So he'd be sitting in his little chair and, like, let's say I'm walking in and he'd be like, oh, hey, Shania. And he'd look at his wife and he'd be like, and I know, like, I've heard them say things behind my back and things like that, and I stopped going to that church. And the thing is, if I didn't have a Christian community around me, I would probably not go to any church. I'd start to drift away from God because I don't have people lifting me up. We don't want to be like that person. We don't want to be the one that's driving people away from Christianity, away from good churches, away from good communities. But anyways, a lot of times Christians judge other Christians, especially in high school. Like, raise your hand if you're in high school. Okay, raise your hand if you're in middle school. Middle school's really scary. I trauma bonded with people over middle school, and I was homeschooled. Like, I feel remorse for y'all. But even in high school, people are judging other Christians? Like, why can't we be one body in Christ together, raising each other up? It doesn't matter what denomination we are. What matters is that we believe in Jesus Christ and that he died on the cross for our sins. That should unite us. That shouldn't drive us apart. And a lot of times, Christians feel like a gentle correction will help people get out of sin, but it turns into a hateful comment. Like, I could be, like, thinking that I sound really nice, and I could be talking over here to Briley, and I could be like, Briley, your hair needs fixing. But I mean it in a nice way. Like, I don't want her to walk around with bad hair, which her hair is gorgeous, by the way. Ignore that. But she could be like, oh, my gosh, she hates me. She thinks my hair is ugly. I'm going to go cry and never talk to her again. A lot of the times, and I think most people usually think that they're doing the right thing, but a lot of times it comes out as something really mean. And sometimes our gentle corrections turn into hateful comments, and it ends up making that person want to sin just because of the way they were treated. Go to Matthew 7. I know, we do reading. It's like school again. Don't you love that? Hold on, I'll grab my Bible too. So in Matthew 7, 1 and 2, it says, do not judge, or just one actually, do not judge or you too will be judged. The only person that could ever actually be righteous enough to judge us was Jesus. But yeah, we feel as Christians that we need to judge everybody around us. And I do it too. I will look at people and I'll be like, oh, they're not raising their hands in worship? Like, I must be a better Christian than them, which honestly, I don't do that, but like I've heard it happen and I haven't said anything, and to me that's bad enough already. And then it goes on to say, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So if you're judging other people, would you want to be, like, this sounds like something you tell, like, a five-year-old. But if you, like, it's like saying, if you're going to be mean to this person, would you want to be treated like that? But seriously, if you judge others, do you want to be judged like that? Do you want to be treated the way that they get treated? Do you want to have the consequences that they have? Because it says, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. So why are we judging others? The only person righteous enough to judge was Jesus. Nobody is perfect enough to judge, because we all have our own sins and we all have our own struggles, and you never know what somebody's actually going through. Some of these Christians belittle judgment like it's one of their fruits of the Spirit. They'll go like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, and judgment. Like, bro, where did you even get that? I also feel like we judge ourselves sometimes, even more than we judge others. Like yesterday, he was talking about how we talk to ourselves. And a lot of us just talk to ourselves in a negative way. We see other people comparing themselves to each other or whatever, and then we start comparing ourselves to those people and start comparing other people to us. And we'll start like comparing ourselves to each other like we're trying to find the right watermelon at the grocery store. It's not our place to judge anyone, including ourselves. In Matthew 7, it says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and yet pay no attention to the plank in your eye? How can you tell people to stop sinning when you have a giant pile of sins locked in your closet that you just don't let out anymore? God didn't call us to judge. God called us to lead. Don't get me wrong. Judgment and self-correction are two completely different things, and sometimes even your friends need corrections. I'll literally prefer to be around the people that keep me in check rather than the people who let me everything I do that I shouldn't be doing slide. Sometimes we need to correct ourselves. We need to listen to God and follow what he tells us to do, even if we don't feel like it. If you don't allow God to change your life, you shouldn't call yourself a Christian. Like, that sounds really harsh, but in my opinion, if you don't allow God to change your life, you shouldn't call yourself a Christian. Because a follower of God follows God, doesn't stay there and say, oh, I know God, but I'm not going to follow him. You keep moving in a path towards the righteous king. You don't walk away from him. A Christian that actually loves God and follows God, wants to be more around God, will be willing to give and lay down what they have for God. It should be God first, not, oh, well, I was really busy today, so I actually can't pray today, God. I can't read my Bible. I can't talk to you today. It's, like, not the right time. You shouldn't include God in your life when you feel like it. You should let God take over your life. Let God lead. And right now, some of you are nodding along thinking, yeah, that's easy. I'm going to tell you, it's not easy. It might feel easy because it's the purpose of this camp is to show you the love of God and get your relationship with God in order so you can go home and you can start evangelizing and you can start following Jesus in your life, including him in every single thing you do. But when you get home and you get distracted, you might start thinking about what this person thinks or what that person thinks or how much money you're going to make or how much followers you're going to get. There may be a point in your life when you feel led to do something you were called to do, but you're going to say no because you are too scared or you want a family or you want to be rich. And it's going to be the biggest test of your life. And you don't want to say no to these things. God's never going to give you something you can't handle. There might be times where you feel frustrated. And you're like, God, why'd you do that? Why'd you let this happen? My life was good. But guess what? Sometimes God gives us little struggles to condition us for the plan he has for us. Sometimes we have to let God decide what we need to do because he sees the bigger story. Sometimes we have to let God lead because he sees the bigger story. He has good plans for us. Just read Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. Let God lead. It's like going out to the field to pick a flower, not even knowing that God had a whole bouquet waiting for you at home. If you'd just taken that leap of faith, if you had just taken that step out into the great unknown, keeping your eyes locked on the king, keeping your eyes locked on Jesus, maybe there would have been such a good reward at the end, such a good plan that he had in mind for you if you just followed him. Like Peter, when Jesus was walking on water, the second he took his eyes off of Jesus, he sunk. If you don't let God change your life, the devil will take your life. If you have notes, I would write that down. If you don't let God change your life, the devil will take your life. The devil comes to steal, kill, and destroy. If you don't let God be your shield and your sword, it allows openings for the devil to do whatever he wants. His biggest plan is to turn you away from God. That means you'll miss out of an eternity with God. The devil will take you for all you have if you don't fight it back, and if you don't back it up with faith and facts and fighting and prayer and community. The biggest fight you'll ever fight is the spiritual battle with the devil, but it's also the easiest fight to win. The second you turn to God and allow him to lead your life, the devil loses. Instead of it being the devil versus you, it'll be the devil versus the Almighty King who created the heavens and the earth. Satan is no match for Christ. You might be, but Satan isn't. So let God lead your life. In my opinion, you shouldn't call yourself a follower of God if you don't let God lead your life. Like, sure, you might believe in God, but even demons believe in God. If you don't allow God to lead your life, and if you don't deliberately stop sinning, how are you going to keep a relationship with God? Life obviously sucks sometimes, but how are you going to live life like it's a living hell when you know there's a better option, an option that gives you eternal security and peace, and an option that loves you more than any human could ever? One that never fails, one that does not mess up. Why would you choose to walk your walk alone when you have a relationship with the King of Kings? And if you do have a relationship with God, how could you let others walk without him? Let me tell you, Gen Z and Gen Alpha might be known for being a cook generation because we were raised by millennials. But you know what? We're the most devoted generations out there. If we put our minds to it, we will get it done. We'll be making 5-year plans to get a gaming streak or a YouTube channel, but you know what? If you started putting the same amount of effort that you put in your snap streak into Jesus, the generation would change. Like, y'all be walking around like, what does your snap streak look like? Oh, only 1 million? Like, I have 70 times 7 that, loser. Like, how are some of y'all spending more time creating thirst traps on TikTok than you are with Jesus? Also, I'm talking up to myself mainly because I looked at my, like, screen time on my phone a couple weeks ago, and it was 9.5 hours. How does one accomplish this? I work a full-time job, and after my job, I go and teach karate, and I still have 9.5 hours of screen time, and 5 of it was Instagram. Like, I'd be doing this too. If I put all of that effort into praying and talking to God, this generation would be different. What I really want to talk to you about is strengthening your relationship with God. So get your notes out if you have them, and if you don't, you might want to write this down on your phone. Most of you are Christians. But most of you don't share your life with God. He's just kind of waiting there. Some of you probably feel stuck, like God's not talking to you, or maybe you just haven't felt prompted for anything. But sometimes you have to open up and make space for God's plan to understand what you need to do. Me personally, I'm a huge planner. I'm obsessed with the future. I'm so excited for what God has in plan for me that I start planning it for myself. Most of the time, though, the plan I have for myself is contradicting the plan God has for me. And sometimes I have to remember that man-made battles don't equal heavenly success. Think about it. Man-made battles won't ever equal heavenly success. And honestly, they don't even give you worldly success. You're never going to add up to what you have in mind for yourself. You're never going to be perfect. You're going to keep messing up over and over again. You're not going to get success. Man-made battles don't equal heavenly success. The first thing you have to do is get rid of your timeline. Write that down. The timeline you create for yourself isn't the timeline God has in plan for you. You need to let go of your plans and let God give you what you need. And some of you be following your timeline, then looking at God when things don't go to plan. Like, why'd you let that happen? But you've been following your own plan. Sometimes I feel like God allows us to make our own failures. God gives us our own decisions. If you look back at Adam and Eve, he gave them the decision to eat the apple. He didn't force them. The devil didn't force them. They had the decision to eat that. God gives us our own decisions, and sometimes we have to fall into failure to realize that that's not the right decision. And even though he knows exactly what we need to do, he does let us decide. And sometimes when we make poor decisions, he just lets us fall and then picks us back up and lets us try again and learn from our failures. Who here has played Mario Kart? Okay, you know in Mario Kart where you're like on a hill and you like fall off and there's this little cloud guy that picks you back up and puts you back on track? That's kind of how I think of God. Like, we can be over here, we can be going on the right track, going on the path that we need to go on, and then we fall off. And God's going to pick us back up and put it right back on the track that we need to go on. But sometimes you just have to let go. Let go of your timeline. Let go of your expectations. Just let go and let God. And the next thing is include God in every part of your life. Don't just include God when you feel worthy enough or when you feel like you need him. Include him in everything you do. He's literally the best friend you could ever have if you let him. Let God be there when you mess up. Let him be there for your victories, your fights. He sees it all anyways. Then you can make God your number one priority. God shouldn't be a side job. God is the main guy. The more you allow God in your life, the easier life's going to be to handle. Life's not going to be easier ever, but if you have God guiding you through it, you'll be handling it completely different. You'll be reacting differently. God shouldn't be second to anything. Jobs, sports, school, parents, kids, spouses, it doesn't matter. And leaders, I'm also talking to you. God comes first. If you don't make your heavenly relationship with God your number one priority, it won't be your number one relationship. Put God first. In Genesis 15:11, this is a weird one, it says, "Then the birds of prey came down on the carcass, but Abraham drove them away." And you're probably thinking, like, Shania, what do you mean, you, like, crazy chud? In this chapter, though, it's talking about a sacrifice that Abraham made for God. But after he had put all his efforts into finding and killing the perfect offering, some vultures came and tried to destroy what Abraham had intended for God. So this 85-year-old man starts battling and batting away these vultures, protecting what he has for God. Even after probably being exhausted from creating the perfect sacrifice, he fought to protect what he had for God. And this man was old. I mean, like, you look at Kyle and Amanda, he's like double that. He didn't allow how he felt to control how he fought. Abraham batted off those vultures even after probably being so dead and exhausted. But he didn't allow how he felt to control how he fought, which is my next point. Don't allow how you feel control how you fight. Don't allow your feelings to control your life. The world says listen to your heart, but God says listen to me. God says listen to the Almighty King, listen to the Bible. If you allow your feelings to control you, you will be fighting the hardest fight ever. Coming from one hormonal teenager to another one, your feelings are there to take advantage of you. Be like Abraham. Fight for God. Don't allow how you feel control you. The world is crazy, and it'll try to get you into this culture that follows your feelings and follows peer pressure, but that's not what God has in plan for you. Don't be afraid to be different. The world wants you all to be exactly the same brain-dead zombies. The devil uses peer pressure as one of his biggest weapons in teenagers. He wants us to be afraid of worship, where he wants us to be afraid to be different in front of our friends so our faith won't spread and our relationships with God won't grow. But let me tell you this. Your private relationship with God should always be stronger than your public relationship. If you don't have a strong private relationship, if you don't spend your time in prayer, if you don't spend your time reading the Bible and talking to God and worshiping God in private, how are you going to do this in public? How are you not just going to be acting? And I know this because I've been a worship leader since I was like 11. And a lot of the times I didn't feel like the presence of God was over me. I didn't feel like raising my hands. But I did it anyways just to act. And back then, I didn't do anything outside of worship that glorified God. I mean, my parents worked at church, right? So I would go to church 4 days a week. I was homeschooled. I didn't do karate yet. I literally only went to church. And when I was at church, I would never spend time with God. If I was in service, I'd be playing games on my phone. Or I'd be scrolling on YouTube shorts. I would never actually put the effort in to have a relationship with God, but then I'd get up and I'd lead worship and I'd pretend like I have the best relationship with him. If your private relationship isn't stronger than your public relationship with God, you shouldn't have a public relationship with God. To be in a deep relationship with God, you have to fully believe in him. You can't just give your life to God at camp and then come home and forget all about him. In Ezra 10:1, it says, "While Ezra was praying and confessing and weeping and throwing himself down before the house of God, a large crowd of Israelites, men, women, and children, gathered around him, and they too wept bitterly." This leads me to my last point. All it takes is one. Ezra wasn't afraid to be in a busy street. He wasn't afraid to be the one publicly confessing to God and weeping and crying out to God. He wasn't afraid to be the one bawling his eyes out at the feet of Jesus in front of everybody. He wasn't afraid of the peer pressure. In a busy street, he wasn't afraid of getting trampled over. He wasn't afraid of, like, anybody judging him. He was just there for God. And people started to follow around him. A large crowd of Israelites, a large crowd of people started to worship, and they too wept bitterly. It just takes one to start a revival. It just takes one worshiper for people to start to worship at the feet of Jesus. Jesus was that one. Ezra was that one. So I'm going to ask you, are you willing to be that one? Are you willing to be the one to cry out to God and say, "Lord, break my heart for what breaks yours"? And are you willing to be the one to cry in front of your friends, in front of your leaders, in front of your teachers, in front of your parents? Are you willing to be the one the Lord uses? Are you willing to be the one others judge? Are you willing to be the one others hate? Are you willing to be the one that lets God break your heart for what breaks his? All it takes is one. And sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes you'll be like, "Yeah, I'm that one. I know that. I'm the one that's going to change the world." But then the second you have an opportunity to, or the second you feel God pushing you to go talk to this person. I was at Arby's once, and I felt God telling me to go talk to this lady at the register. And she looked really mean. Like, she looked mad. And he was telling me to go ask her if she knew Jesus. And guess what I did? I got scared and I walked away. I didn't even order anything. Like, I didn't even get my mozzarella sticks. You realize how crazy that is? But he was trying to push me towards getting this lady and giving her heart to God and having her have a relationship with God. And I said no. I said, "That's too hard." I said, "I'm not willing to do that right now. I'm not willing to give what I have for you, God." And hopefully somebody else, and I'm sure somebody else came and listened to God and talked to her. And I'm sure she's probably at church right now talking to God and being around people. And I'm sure that God used someone else, but he could have used me. I could have been the one to go talk to her and tell her, "Hey, Jesus loves you. Hey, Jesus died for you." Like, I could have been the one to tell her that you'd be internally secure. You'd be living in heaven forever in paradise if you just let Jesus. But I didn't. And so what I'm going to say is all it takes is one. So everybody close your eyes. If you feel like you are the one that is willing to do that, if you're willing to be the one to be judged, to be hated, to turn people towards Christ and away from the devil, to turn people away from death and towards life, if you feel like you're willing to be the one like Ezra to go and pray and confess and weep at the feet of Jesus, can you raise your hand? If you feel like that one, raise your hand. I see your hand. Okay, put your hands down. Here's what I want you to do. Everybody can open their eyes. I want everybody to scoot away from their friends. If you have empty benches, fill them up. Like, I'm talking COVID-19, 6-foot distancing. I'm breaking up bromances right now. I feel really bad. Okay. What I want you to do is, and you're going to do this in your own way. I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I want you to talk to God. If you feel like that one, I want you to say, Lord, break my heart for what breaks yours. God's watching people right now continue to fail over and over again, to continue to cry, continue to live life without him. And he's asking if you want to be that one. And what I want you to do is I want you to ask God what you need to do. Because I don't know it. You might not know it. But God knows it. God has good plans for you. So why don't you let him show you your plan? So what I want you to do, and you can stay completely quiet. You can kneel. You can stand. I want you to close your eyes. Don't look at your friends. Don't look at anybody. Don't look at me. Don't look at the floor. Close your eyes. And you start telling God, Lord, break my heart. Lord, break my heart for what breaks yours. I want you to start weeping at the feet of Jesus. Lay everything you have down at the feet of Jesus. And I'm going to stay quiet, and it might take a second. I did this weeks ago, and I was freaking out because I was like, why am I not crying? Like, what's wrong with me? And it took me like 20 minutes, which we're not going to be here for that long. But it took me like 20 minutes to say, God, I actually want you in my life. And sometimes we just have to lay it all down. So I'm going to stay quiet. Talk to God. Pray. Lord, break my heart for what breaks yours.